Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 23, The Brahmana's Wise Blessed, text 1. Sri Gopau Chu.
Sri Gopau Chu.
Rama Rama Mahabaho.
Rama Rama Mahabaho.
Krishna Dushta Nibarhana.
Krishna Dushta Nibarhana.
Eshavai Bharate Chunnas.
Eshavai Bharate Chunnas.
Tach Chantim Kartam Arhata.
Tachantim Kartam Arhata.
Sri Gopau Chu. The cowherd boy said, Rama Rama. O Lord Rama, Lord Rama. Mahabaho. O mighty arm one. Krishna. O Lord Krishna. Dushta. Of the wicked. Nibarhana. O destroyer. Esha, this, my, indeed, badhate, is causing distress. Shoot, hunger, na, to us. Tachantim, is counteraction. Gartum arhata, you ought to do. The cowherd boy said, O Rama, Rama, mighty arm one. O Krishna, chastiser of the wicked, we are being harassed by hunger, and you should do something about it. Purport. The cowherd boys jokingly imply that since Sri Krishna is the subduer of all bad things, the Lord should subdue their hunger by arranging for them to eat. In this statement by the cowherd boys, we observe the intimate loving friendship enjoyed with the Supreme Personality of God. Om Ganatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pavunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasavi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are moving in this lila from reciprocation to reciprocation. That is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the nature of Bhakti Yoga. I've been pointing out in travels around the world that yoga is not simply physical exercises or breathing exercises. Yoga is about the exchange of love on the highest level between the Lord, who is Om Pavitra, the Supreme Pure, and the devotee, who is actually qualitatively pure, as pure as the Lord, in his original constitutional position, in the original constitutional position of the devotee. Yes, it is shocking to think about that, that originally, we are constitutionally as pure as Krishna. But what happened? Obviously, in material existence, we are a long way from that. We have forgotten the nectar of reciprocation with the Supreme Lord, and we are trying to have loving exchanges with the illusory energy, a very, very counterproductive activity, which somehow it seems we never tire of. There is a Sanskrit term, mamata, which refers to possessiveness. It can be used in relation to the material energy, as well as, of course, the spiritual energy. We are used to hearing that word in relation to the spiritual energy. How in the devotee's relationship with the Supreme Lord, the devotee feels a sense of possessiveness. This pervades the rasas, the relationships with Krishna. For example, in dasyaras, servitorship. The mamata has its effect, the possessiveness has its effect, in that the devotee in servitorship feels, Krishna is my master, it's possessiveness. He's my master. And then sakyaras, friendship. We're seeing that now. Krishna, you're our friend. We're hungry. We should do something about it. This is possessiveness. We're mates. That you all can understand here very well. So, then, Vatsalya Prem, pure love of Krishna and parental love. Krishna is my child. If I don't take care of him, he will be hungry. He will not be bathed. This possessiveness, my child. My role as a parent. And then, of course, in Madhurya Ras, the confidential conjugal relationship with Krishna. There's a possessiveness feel by the lover. In material existence, we also get mamata, possessiveness. My material energy. My niche in the material cosmos. My oneness with the body, with the mind, and my material circumstances. My. This is mamata, possessiveness. But of course, it is a very, very disastrous possessiveness. The cleansing action of bhakti yoga rids us of this false possessiveness and gradually reawakens our original possessiveness in our relationship with Krishna. So the cowherd boys, they are feeling this possessiveness. Krishna, you're our friend, our friend. It seems like they're petitioning Krishna with a material desire, doesn't it? What is this, approaching God to fulfill hunger? Religions on various levels can approach God for material benefit. Better to approach with that than not at all, as Shukadeva Goswami says. Better to approach devotional service with material desires and expecting material benefit than not approach devotional service at all. So therefore, you have in various religions, most of them are acknowledging the Supreme Lord for the sake of fulfilling material desires, no matter what ism people call the religion. There's almost always some mixed bhakti there. Lord, I'll give you this, and you give me that. Whether it's the great baker, give us the daily bread, or something else, give us mystic powers. Give me Lakshmi, Lakshmi, Lakshmi in that house by the sea. Jai Jagadisha Hari. All these isms can't satisfy the self. Because the self actually originally is Nityasiddha, a pure, perfect devotee in relation to Krishna. The cowherd boys, in their approach to Krishna and Rama, are not expressing any material desires. They are acting in intimacy. And actually, the acharyas point out, they're thinking of Krishna's benefit. By their saying, we are hungry, they're actually thinking, Krishna, you ought to be hungry by now, so we all should eat because you should eat. And at the same time, because of the intimacy, they're expressing, we're hungry. But the main thing is that Krishna should be satisfied. But they're friends with Krishna. So shouldn't friends eat together? This is possessiveness in the relationship. It's very difficult for material persons to understand. Because if you approach someone, we are being harassed by hunger, you should do something about it. Definitely seems like there's a desire for one's own benefit. Krishna, as Prahlad Maharaj points out, is the perfect master. He knows how to be elusive from the role of fulfilling material desires. He knows how to train his devotees to rise above that. Prahlad Maharaj points out in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, that the real master is not bought off like the demigods are. You make some propitiation, some appeal to the demigods, and in order to keep their positions, in order to keep their flock, keep the puja coming, they'll fulfill your desires. But Krishna won't do like that. Krishna can't be bought off. So Prahlad Maharaj told Lord Nrsingadev, you are the real master. You're the pure master. You can't be bought off. And as for me, allow me to present myself. I'm your pure servant. You're the master. I'm the servant. There's no other relationship than this. There'll never be another relationship than this. So please, don't tempt me with material desires. Prahlad Maharaj reminded Lord Nrsingadev of his lineage. You know, I'm born in a demoniac family, the dynasty of Asuras. So by your asking me what benediction do I want, you're tempting me. With my background, with my materialistic background, I'd rather not be tempted in that way. So in this way, Prahlad Maharaj responds to the Lord's presentation. What benediction would you like? Now, you might say, is Lord Nrsingadev entrapping Prahlad Maharaj? Like in law enforcement, for example, if the police set you up for a crime themselves and urge you to do it, and then you do it, that can be challenged in court. Legal term, at least in some countries, is entrapment. We've got some drugs here. Would you like to buy it? Come on. You really want to buy it, don't you? I'll put it in your hand. That can be challenged in court if the police go too far. So, is Lord Nrsingadev guilty of entrapment? No. What Lord Nrsingadev is doing is revealing the pure devotion of his devotee. That's all. Let the whole world see Prahlad's glories. Let Prahlad be glorified. That's the plan of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj says, I don't want anything except your devotional service. But my father, he could use a benediction or two. Just see the compassion of a devotee. Prahlad's father tried to kill him in so many ways, as you know. Now, actually, very interesting point. Srila Prabhupada once explained that Prahlad never took it that his father was trying to kill him. Prahlad just took it all. He's a little boy. He just thought, father's playing with me. I know this is hard for us to grasp. But he didn't think that his father was trying to kill him. He took it in another way. But Lord Nrsingadev didn't take it that way. So Prahlad had no remorse, no anger against his father. So therefore, when Nrsingadev asked for a benediction, asked Prahlad, what benediction do you want? Prahlad declined and then said, my father, can you do something about my father? And Prahlad explained that, look, I've seen how material benedictions work. I've had a front row seat on what happens with material benedictions. Brahma gave my father a material benediction, and now we see the result. He attained the greatest opulence, the greatest power, the greatest position in the universe, and it's finished in a couple of seconds. What's the use of that kind of material benefit? I have seen it all. In this pastime, with the Yajnapatnis, the wives of the Brahmanas, you're in the same day when in the early morning Krishna went to the Yamuna to playfully demand that the gopis who are bathing in the river, they should hand over their cloth. This was out of reciprocation. They were praying to the goddess Katyayani, basically Durga, please give us Krishna as our husband. Because it was the tradition that young girls of that age, they would worship Katyayini on the bank of a river, making a deity in the sand, decorating the deity, and making some simple offerings. It's the tradition that young girls do that in order to ask for a nice husband. So you can see how in Vrindavan these traditions go on, yet the point is always Krishna. The gopis are showing that anything can be used to attain Krishna. So they are using the demigods to attain Krishna. It's still pure bhakti. They're not approaching the demigods to get something for themselves. They want to attain Krishna. So they're praying to Katyayini, the tradition, but the tradition is 100% focused on pure devotion to Krishna. You remember in Chaitanya Leela, when the young girls were on the bank of the Ganga doing the same thing, and Lord Chaitanya would come and demand all the offerings. And the girls would, they would be quite flustered. Nimai, you shouldn't do this. We're all your friends. We're from the same village. How can you do this? And then Nimai Pandit. This is before he was Nimai Pandit, he was a young boy. Nimai. He would tell them, look, this is the way it works. If you don't give me all the worship that you're giving to Durga, Katyayini. Durga has different expansions. I promise you, you will all have husbands who are old men with lots of children from another wife. But if you do present me all the offerings, I promise you, you'll have handsome, rich husbands who will give you 6 sons. So the girls turned over all the offerings to Nimai. Here in Krishna Leela, the gopis are worshipping Katyayini. Their prayer is that son of Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Sutta, please make it ours. So Krishna is fulfilling their prayers. While they're bathing, Krishna makes a request, and they show their exclusive devotion to Krishna by casting aside all their inhibitions and casting aside all their conceptions and just doing what Krishna says. In this way, things are a two-way street. Don't think that little Krishna is being demanding. Krishna knows how to package that whole situation. He was a little boy. Materially, he was underage, so you couldn't say that Krishna was being lusty. You couldn't. If you want to attack him from the material point of view, you can't do that because he's so young. He's less than 8 years old. And the cowherd boys that Krishna had with him during this leela, they were little infants, so they couldn't conceive of male-femaleness. In this way, Krishna's pastimes are arranged perfectly, but still people like to find fault with their material intelligence. How can you use material intelligence to enter into spiritual pastimes? You cannot even understand Krishna's presence as a material energy with your material intelligence. You see, if with material intelligence you could understand Krishna, then you could just look at the material energy and understand Krishna, because the material energy is Krishna's. But that you can't show you. It's not possible to understand Krishna from the material platform. Otherwise, Krishna says everything is him. Yes, that's a fact. Everything is Krishna. The material energy is also Krishna. But you can't understand that from the material platform. Therefore, when you look at the material energy, without looking from the spiritual, the perfect spiritual vantage point, you won't realize Krishna. So if we cannot understand, we can't realize Krishna by looking at the material energy, if we're not on the right platform, what makes you think you're going to understand the spiritual energy, which is so much more difficult to understand because it works opposite from Maya? It seems quite logical when we're within Maya. Well, my body and mind are material. The material world is material. So what's the difficulty in understanding? Once again, that's that false sense of intimacy that you feel with the material energy. Yeah, I somehow or other, in spite of all the traumas and dramas of material existence, I feel at home in the material atmosphere. There'll be some reciprocation. There'll be some warmth. There'll be some fulfillment. I know there'll be some problems. I'm ready for that. I know there'll be some ups and downs, but that's just all part of the bargain, you know? It's all part of the deal. But more or less, you know, there'll be something there for me. That's mamata. That is feeling possessiveness, but in the wrong way, on the material platform. By the gopis surrendering to Krishna. It's not that simply Krishna stole their clothes, but he also stole their hearts. At the same time, they stole his heart. So this is the real crux of bhakti, the mutual heart stealing. So Krishna told them, I'm very pleased by your devotion. I promise you, there'll be a time when all your desires will be fulfilled. Krishna's referring to Rasa-lila. That time will come. And then he asked them to go back to the village because they were just standing there, just transfixed, just looking at Krishna and overwhelmed with bashfulness. And they're thinking, the acharyas point out, they're thinking at that point, Krishna must be attached to us. And that thought is giving them great satisfaction. Now, is that selfishness? Generally, if a young girl in material existence thinks that some boy is attached to her, it's like an ego gratification, which resembles the ego gratification that men get when they pursue girls, and it's like a conquest. It's like predators. So the men get an ego boost through the predator activities. And the ladies get the ego boost through being captured, being sought after, being desired. So this feeling of the gopis that, let's just see, Krishna, he went through all this whole intricate dealings with us, Varnahastra Leela, the stealing of the clothes, he must be attached. But they're thinking that for Krishna's pleasure, because the bottom line with these topmost devotees of Krishna is that how can Krishna enjoy without us? His enjoyment can't be complete unless we are involved. That is selflessness. That is pure devotional service. So after the Varnahastra Leela, then the reciprocation still continues. Please understand that when you talk about bhakti, you're talking about three things. The bhakta, the devotee, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and seva, devotional service. It is becoming current in the yoga world now that, you know, bhakti is starting to become a buzzword. And the idea is that bhakti means devotion, just the expression of devotion. Whether to this, that, or the other, it's bhakti. Emotional expression of devotion. That's the now the pop understanding of bhakti yoga. Not exclusively for Krishna, as the yoga texts themselves say, but just devotion to someone or something. Aim it here, aim it there. Just heartfelt expression. That's supposedly bhakti, but no. Bhakti means Krishna, Krishna's devotee, and the service. Krishna always reciprocates with the service. In fact, there's competition between the bhakta and the Supreme Lord. The devotee is thinking, I must serve Krishna. Service to Krishna is my life and soul. I don't want to take anything in return. And Krishna is thinking, how much can I give my devotee? So they're constantly competing. Each one wants to outdo the other in the relationship. This is what our hearts are longing for. It can't happen in the material world. Resources are limited. People are limited. Their bodies and minds are limited. Their time in this world is limited. Their strength is limited. So how can there be the limitless competition that you find in the spiritual world between the competition of pure love in which the Lord and the devotee strive to outdo one another? After Krishna and the cowherd boys left from the bank of the Jamuna, they went into the forest. And as I said, the reciprocation continues. Krishna starts looking at the trees and commenting about the devotion of the trees. Aho esham brahma janma sarva pran upajivanam. Oh, how glorious is this birth as a tree. The trees are always giving. They give everything they have. Bark, fruit, roots, leaves, branches, everything. Just like a saintly person. Just gives, gives, gives. And the trees are so tolerant through scorching heat and piercing cold. They stand there just like a saintly person should tolerate. So in this way, Krishna comments on the trees. Of course, the trees in Vrindavan, they're not ordinary. And then Krishna starts to touch the trees, their limbs, their fruits, their leaves. This is reciprocation. Aho esham vadam janma. Not param janma. Vadam janma. Just see. The superior birth. The glorious birth. Because they're giving everything. This is a prelude to the Yajnapatni pastime. The Brahmana's wives blessed and the Brahmins put into their place. The prelude is that Krishna is showing, better be a tree than be a miserly Brahmana. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, this is the tip-off. Krishna is doing many things at one time. He's praising the trees in Vrindavan, reciprocating by touching them, and then giving you a premonition. I'm going to next be dealing with some hard-hearted brahmanas, puffed-up brahmanas. It's better to be a tree than to be them. So, after glorifying the trees, Krishna then takes the cows to the river, and they begin to drink from the cool Yamuna. That's Krishna's reciprocation with the cows. It's Krishna's nonstop reciprocation. We need to get the idea out of our head that Krishna is just some non-dynamic, insensitive entity up there, and we offer our prayers and we hope to get something in return. Maybe like a, what do you call those things? The pokies? Yeah. Okay, we'll throw in a lot of prayers and hopefully one day we hit the jackpot. Oh, we think that Krishna is some insensitive, almighty God who you just have to acknowledge, otherwise you suffer. That is true, but it's a very low-level understanding of bhakti. It's true that Krishna is the proprietor. If you don't recognize the proprietorship, then obviously you're a thief and you get punished. But Krishna has so much more to offer than that. Bhakti is far beyond the concept of, you know, the sinners in the hand of an angry God. God's just waiting for you to slip up and he zaps you with a thunderbolt. But there are laws of nature, which you're supposed to know. If you're in Australia, you're meant to know the laws of the land. Similarly, if you're in material existence, you're meant to know the laws of the cosmos. It's not Krishna's fault that you violate them. If you break the speeding limit, it's not the government's fault. They just make the laws. But you put yourself in a bad situation by breaking the law. Therefore, you get fined. We want to focus on reciprocation. And that's what Krishna is demonstrating. He's now gone from the young gopis to the trees to the cows. And now it's time to show reciprocation with the cowherd boys and especially the yajnaputnis, the wives of the brahmanas. And in showing reciprocation to the wives of the brahmanas, he's going to reveal the miserliness of their husbands. In this way, Krishna establishes that someone may have Vedic knowledge and austerity, but if they don't have bhakti, what's the use? And if they have bhakti, even though they don't have austerity and Vedic knowledge, I'm still interested. But Krishna is showing the supremacy of bhakti. So the setup starts with the so-called hunger of the cowherd boys. Rama, Rama, Mahabaho, Krishna, Dushta, Nibharhana. Rama, you're mighty armed. Krishna, you're Dushtanabhahana, chastiser of the wicked. You have the ability to solve a problem we have. Hunger. You should do something about it because you're qualified. In other words, let's deepen the leela. Let's have some lunch. We've been out since early morning. Let's enjoy the sakyaras of dining or lunching together. So, we look at the next verse. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus entreated by the cowherd boys, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, replied as follows, desiring to please certain of his devotees who were Brahmana's wives. Now, just look at this verse. It's packed with reciprocation, the power of reciprocation. Thus entreated by the cowherd boys. So he's responding to the cowherd boys. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, Devaki Sutta, relationship with Mother Devaki, replied as follows, desiring to please certain of his devotees who were Brahmana's wives. So just see how Krishna, from morning till night in Vrindavan, is just pleasing devotees, reciprocating. And then he tells the cowherd boys, please go to the sacrificial arena, where a group of brahmanas, learned in the Vedic injunctions, are now performing the Angirasa sacrifice to gain promotion to heaven. In other words, Krishna's letting the cowherd boys know, these brahmanas, they're off. They just want some material benefits. They're doing yajnas. They have very intricate yajna knowledge, all for material benefit. So Krishna's giving some philosophical background to the cowherd boys and to us. That, in other words, there's going to be a problem. They're doing these yajnas. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know who is the yajnapati, who is the master of all the yajnas. And then Krishna gives them a strategy. This is life with the cowherd boys, strategizing, devising the ways and means. This is how they enjoy together. When you go there, my dear cowherd boys, simply request some food. Declare to them the name of my elder brother, Lord Balaram, and also my name, and explain that you have been sent by us. So, Krishna encourages them feel free to ask for charity. Don't be embarrassed, even though these brahmanas, they're off. And actually, since these brahmanas are material, you better first mention the name of Balaram, because the brahmanas think material. The brahmanas, that Balaram is the son of a kshatriya, whereas I am the son of Nandamaraja Vaishya. So the brahmanas will calculate that if we do have to give some food, we'll respond to the name of Balaram. At least he's from a higher caste than this Krishna. Also, Krishna is thinking. He says, say the name of Balaram and also my name. This is Krishna's compassion. By hearing those names, they'll wake up. Jeev Jago, they'll wake up out of their illusion. Give them a chance to wake up anyway. But at the same time, Krishna's warning them, it's probably going to be a problem. Krishna knows everything. He knows that the wives of the brahmanas, they are his pure devotees. So in this way, he's accomplishing many purposes. So in text 5, thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cowherd boys went there and submitted their request. They stood before the brahmanas with palms, joined in supplication, and then fell flat on the ground to offer respect. So the cowherd boys, the topmost transcendentalists, they're still respecting the Vedic institution. They're respecting the Vedic culture. So they fall down in full dandavats. Now, the acharyas point out that even while spread on the ground in full dandavats, their effulgence was far brighter than that of the brahmanas. You can just visualize these effulgent beings, full dandavats on the ground. So, in coming days, we'll go over the dialogue between the cowherd boys and the brahmanas. So please remember that Krishna is nonstop reciprocation. This is what our hearts are longing for, but we're looking for that reciprocation in the material world. It doesn't work out. But we're plagued by that sense of intimacy with material energy, that sense of mamata, possessiveness with the material energy. I am Maya's and Maya is mine. This is our problem. By hearing about Krishna's pastimes, we gain confidence in Krishna's loving abilities. Love requires confidence that the beloved can fulfill all the expectations. So Krishna is showing you, I can handle it all. I can handle young girls. I can handle trees. I can handle cows. I can handle everyone's aspirations. I can deal with the cowherd boys. And I can deal with the wives of the brahmanas. Have no fear. Krishna is here. I can handle it all.